So it is Sunday, March 9th. We have saved daylight, and we are back with a new episode of Not Half Bad. I believe this is the 18th episode of this season. I'm Norman of Rumble in the Garden.
And I'm Dave of On the Banks.
And we're here to bring you the best of, or maybe just lament, the place where Rutgers and St. John's find themselves here at the end of the season. I suppose on a certain level where St. John's is better than where Rutgers is, but both teams have a mix of hope and worry at this point of the season.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an up and down kind of week for Rutgers. Well, mostly down, but as usual, some reasons for optimism. They played UConn on the road on Wednesday, mm-hmm. and they lost by 6, but they were in the game the whole time. There was about a 10-minute stretch where it couldn't have been 10 minutes. Maybe a 5-minute stretch where it was 56-53. UConn was in the lead. And for like 3 or 4 possessions in a row, Rutgers literally got the exact shot they wanted and just could not get it to drop. And they really couldn't score much after that. So down 4, Rutgers had the ball with about 40 seconds left. Beautiful pass to Wally Judge, who played a really good game. He should have a layup, and UConn's big man, whose name I forget, blocks him from behind for the tie-up.
Chroma, is that his name?
Yes. Yeah. Blocks him for the tie-up, and that's the game right there. And then they played Cincinnati yesterday, and they played Cincinnati really tough. Twice Cincinnati went on big runs to kind of extend the lead to like 8 or 10. And Rutgers fought back both times, and with about a minute 45 left, Rutgers actually had the lead. But it's clear that, you know, Cincinnati is the coin flip AAC champion, and, you know, they have better players. Rutgers had Joe Jackson in foul trouble for most of the game, which I think helped a lot. No, the small forward.
Oh, you mean power. Justin Jackson?
Justin Jackson. Justin Jackson, he was in foul trouble, which actually really helped Rutgers down the stretch, but you know, he had 4. They couldn't get the 5th on him. Meanwhile, Cincinnati fouled out Wally Judge, so Rutgers really didn't have anybody who could slow Kilpatrick down, and Rutgers down 2 with about 50 seconds left. Cincinnati has the ball. Rutgers is trying to play it out, defend it out. They whittle the shot clock down to 6 and put C gears on Kilpatrick, and Kilpatrick basically just blows right by Seegers and gets an unimpeded layup. And that's the game right there. So that's it. I mean, they lost by 4. They're going to win the AAC tournament. So that's where we are right now.
You're still clinging to that hope.
I'm going to cling to it till they lose.
So that'll be – when is the AAC tournament? Starts on Wednesday, right?
Starts on Wednesday. Rutgers has USF, who they swept this year.
Okay. Well, so USF is quite beatable.
Yeah, and then if they win that game, they'll play Louisville, which is a cakewalk. So clearly the path to the AAC championship is a piece of cake.
I hear Rick Pitino is so enamored with Eddie Jordan that he's just going to let them win, right?
I would take it at this point.
Okay.
Did you watch the press conference, the Eddie Jordan press conference?
I did. It was interesting. We'll go back to that.
All right. I didn't know how you wanted to.
I just wanted to take a moment to say to talk about St. John's week, which was before we recorded last week, or we recorded last week before St. John's played DePaul in a 72-64 right. win. That was probably the least convincing 72-64 win you've seen in a long time. It was St. John's getting a lead up to, I think, 20 points in the second half, and DePaul just whittling it away as St. John's continued to be sloppy with the ball. And then DePaul was within 3. You know, a team that has lost Cleveland Melvin, a team that honestly seems to be playing out the string in the worst way ever. I think they got blown out by Butler, even. You know, that's a team that, you know, fought St. John's at home in the Garden very, very close. You know, the kind of thing you hate to see. Mm-hmm. And then coming off of that, St. John's had 7 days to prepare, or 6 days to prepare for Marquette, who had a game in the middle of the week. Both teams are fighting for the 5th spot in the Big East tournament, and in the Big East. And St. John's and Marquette played one heck of a double overtime game last night. And I was there, and it was just – it was crazy.
Crazy good or crazy – like, because you know
I would
with
say,
them hanging around with DePaul, you said it's ugly and they still won by 11. Is it crazy, you know?
You know, right now, actually before we started the podcast, I started rewatching the St. John's Marquette game because it's one thing to be there live, you know, in the with the away fans or, you know, on press row with the away fans, and it sounds a certain way. I couldn't tell you whether it's crazy good or crazy bad. I mean, the first half, St. John's, no, I'd say crazy questionable. In the first half, St. John's definitely outshot Marquette. I think they shot 50% from inside the arc and 50% outside. And somehow Marquette was in the lead because St. John's couldn't hit their free throws and because St. John's had 8 turnovers. And those little mistakes kept Marquette in it. And then down the stretch, St. John's finally pulled away. You know, they got a nice trap in the corner, earn a steal, D'Angelo Harrison hits a shot, and they're up by a certain amount, right? After some free throws, they're up 6 points. There's 22 seconds left. Game is over, right? Because 6 seconds, 22, I mean, 6 points, 22 seconds, right?
That should be game over.
Should be game over. But no, oh no, not this time, but oh no. St. John's manages to, I don't even understand what all happened. I mean, there was, I mean, it was just the weirdest collection of just strange events. So, yeah, 6-point lead. Devontae Gardner gets the ball in the post because, you know, he's going to make a 4-point shot. And Chris Obekpa fouls him. You know, people say the call might be a little questionable. I'd agree with that. But, you know, you're on the road. You're not going to get that call. That's going to happen. Devontae Gardner has been throwing around his strength. So Gardner goes to the line, hits 2 free throws. You know, he actually executes. Rashid Jordan gets an inbounds play, right? They're up 4 points. And
about 18 seconds
left?
Yeah,
like 18 seconds left. And Steve Lavin has already called a timeout earlier, so I think they might be out of timeouts. I'm not sure. Rashid Jordan has the ball. He's trying to make an inbounds pass. He doesn't see anybody, so I think he tries to go between somebody's legs or tries to bounce off of somebody, which has worked for Sir Dominic Poynter in the past. It did not work this time. And Rashid basically inbounds the ball. It slips. It ends up in the hands of Jake Thomas, and he lays it in. So that's a 2-point game, right? But, you know, there's still like 6 seconds left.
Right.
So you think, okay, this is ugly, but they're going to win. So they foul Orlando Sanchez. St. John's is in the bonus, right? Goes to the line, right? All he has to do, hit one shot, and then it's a 3-point difference. All he has to do is hit 2 shots, and the game's over. He misses the first. Short. Todd Mayo, I think Derek Wilson takes the ball.
So it was a 1-1.
Yeah, it was a 1-1.
Okay.
And Todd Mayo gets the ball, sneaks right into the lane, and easy as you can imagine, hits a buzzer-beating layup runner. It, you know, he got in there.
Right.
And it was just sort of like, guys, come on. Really? Are you kidding me with that? So, so in that sense, that game was kind of frustrating. But as Lavin said after the game, the team did show a lot of grit and heart in continuing to come back and refusing to die. Certainly there were times, especially in the second half, or in the second overtime, where, you know, it really looked like you know, at home, Marquette would have had the game. But St. John's did keep battling, and they kept trying. God's Gift got in there, laid some lumber on people, as Steve Lavin called it. And even though he missed 4 of his 6 free throws, he still put the Johnnies in position to win. He had a really nice screen that freed up D'Angelo Harrison for one of the decisive shots. I think it was for his 3 in transition. That I know on Twitter people were like, that was the no, yes shot. But if you thought, of all, I've seen a lot of St. John's basketball, and that was one of the smoothest, almost most planned shot attempts I've seen all year. It was
really?
I mean, it was smart. Both, I think, Steve Lavin and Buzz Williams like playing against, as Buzz Williams called it yesterday, broken defenses. And that is a great way to get an open shot with, you know, active man defenses that are up in your grill. So, hey, I mean, I guess that works.
Yeah, they pulled it out, you know, Jordan with the free throws at the end of the game.
The free throw, because
he only made one.
You know, same as with the end of the first overtime, if Rishi Jordan makes two free throws, we're not talking about double overtime. And in the second overtime, if he makes that second free throw, you know, it's just like, you know, it's a little less tight. You have to worry less about Derek Wilson's shot. So
he was wide open on that shot,
yes,
too.
Yes, and to be fair, you know, as I think I mentioned to you yesterday, Derek Wilson is the epitome of a non-shooter. He is, I didn't know this, but I think, and I'll look this up for you, Derek Wilson is shooting, oh no, he's taking 11% of the team shots, or 12%, which is still pretty low. And he's shooting 42% inside the arc and 0.071 outside the arc, 1 for 14. He's a 44% free throw shooter.
Oh, so just let him have the ball.
Kind of, yeah. You know, he's a linebacker playing point guard. And that was always his, you know, his thing when he was coming out of high school. He's from Anchorage originally, and I think he went to prep school somewhere, maybe Northfield, Mount Herndon, or Herman, or whatever it's called, one of those schools. And I probably have that wrong, so I'm sorry, Derek Wilson's family. But he's a pass first, pass second, and pass third point guard. He's a Cliff Clink Scales, if you remember him. He's a... you know, he's not a guy that you're going to expect to take the last shot. And that's a little bit on Marquette for having him take that shot.
That was planned? That wasn't the St. John's defense that forced it into his hands?
I mean, I think Buzz Williams explained it as, you know, they had, I think, three or four options. And, you know, he was probably listed as option four, maybe, in that press conference. And I think he was about option six.
Okay. You'd rather Buzz Williams taking that shot.
Yeah, you'd almost rather them call a timeout or, you know, slap the ball off of somebody.
Right.
And Derek Wilson went to the Hotchkiss School, actually.
Oh, okay. But it sounded like an exciting game. I mean, double overtime.
It was exciting. I mean,
it's an exciting game.
You really did feel like you were watching two teams that were refusing to lose despite their obvious flaws and drawbacks.
Mm-hmm. So where does St. John's stand now? That's a pretty good road win.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it ends up being a fine enough road win. It's not ugly, but it doesn't put them over the top. Marquette isn't in the position where a win over Marquette gets you very deep into that bubble conversation. St. John's is still, I'm not sure where they are right now, but I believe they're still beyond the last four out.
Yeah,
because Marquette's, I mean, it doesn't really matter right now. So St. John's is, they're fifth in the Big East, which is what was predicted. Mm-hmm. And they will face Providence on Thursday afternoon. They definitely need to win that game. And I don't know, maybe they're fine after winning that one game. That's sort of like a knockout game for the NCAA tournament. But probably not. I think St. John's probably wants to be secure and at least get to the finals of the Big East tournament if they want to get to the NCAAs. But we don't know yet, you know?
Yeah, who would they likely play if they beat Providence?
Villanova.
Oh, Villanova.
Villanova, who you know, despite the closeness of the games, did seem to surgically cut up the Red Storm. It's like they saw a team, they knew what to do with them, and St. John's has no idea how to get the ball deep into the paint against them. So St. John's needs a hot shooting night, which they haven't had a lot of hot shooting nights. They've had a lot of hot scoring nights when they can get to the rim and force turnovers. But can they do that against Villanova? And that's the question.
Gotcha. Now it's Providence is not an easy battle either.
No, so. Providence is very long. They're scrappy. They're kind of they're such a weird team because you look at them and you think even without Chris Dunn, shouldn't they be better?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, they seem to have so much talent or so much scoring talent, but they have a lot of guys who I don't know. Just the way they go about their game is just very interesting. A lot of dribbling. A lot of dribble motions, and you feel like there's maybe better ways of getting the ball from place to place than what they do. You know, they tend to turn the ball over. They tend to make risky passes. and their defense needs to be better. I don't know what's wrong with Providence, but they're just a little off.
I think they're a little shorthanded. I mean, they beat, was it Seton Hall they beat, where they only played six players?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically what it is. I mean, they're talented, but they're not deep this year, and I think that hurts. They're probably exhausted.
Yeah, and you're right. That is seven players, because Bryce Cofani played a minute, and Carson DeRozier's played 9 minutes. And you had two guys who played 40, and the other three played 37, 37, and 36 minutes.
Right, so...
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, so they're probably exhausted, but, you know, the tournaments kind of re-energize.
I guess, teams. But how re-energized can you get when you've already played four double overtime games?
Oof, oh,
in
wow.
In the Big East play. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't think it's a walk for St. John's.
No, it's certainly not. Though I will also say that Marquette has played six overtime games, two of them double overtime.
Oh, my God.
The Big East is parity, man.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in parity.
Yeah, that's great. That's fun. It sucks when you're trying to be that, you know, where you're in the position that St. John's is in.
Sure.
Because you can't really point to anything that gets you over the top, but it's fun for the fans.
Yeah, it is. But I think that for one of the problems that college basketball has is that a lot of the fans are casual fans. They only care when you get to the tournament or if you have a lot of teams going to the tournament. So what you're going to have with the Big East is what you have with a lot of the lower major, mid-major teams, where you have to consider different ways of organizing your tournament so you get the best teams to the tournament, you know?
Right.
So right now, you know, the Big East probably has, I don't know if these teams are tournament ready or tournament capable, but they're not bad. In KenPom's rankings, hold on, let me just bring this up for a second. In KenPom's rankings, only one team, DePaul, is under 100. And then there are six teams that are over 60.
Wow.
You know, St. John's is the third highest at 38, which is very interesting, despite their record. And Xavier is 43, Providence is 53, Marquette is 58. Villanova and Creighton are both top 10. And what that says is that there's a lot of good teams there, but not a lot of elite talent. And not a lot of elite basketball, and it really hurt the league, because the league really could end up with only two bids. I would think that they get a third, because somebody in that St. John's, Xavier, Providence trio will cannibalize himself. But you know, it's entirely possible that, you know, St. John's resume won't be enough, and if they beat Providence and then they lose in the next round and then Xavier loses to Marquette, maybe the Big East really only gets two teams in.
Yeah, and when, you know, we talked about last week, when Rutgers wins the AAC tournament, he's going to totally take a spot from somebody. So.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, though, because I don't know. I haven't really thought a lot about the bid thieves. I've been thinking about the low-level conferences, but I don't know if you saw this, but Wisconsin-Green Bay lost last night. Now, I don't know if you've been following, but this is slightly significant. I don't know that they're good enough to get an at-large bid. The Horizon's pretty weak. They have a win over Virginia, I believe it was, which was their one marquee win. But, you know, they might be on the edge there.
Yeah, yeah. The only reason I knew anything about that game is because somebody mentioned that it had two Rutgers connections, because Gary Waters in Cleveland State was playing Wisconsin-Green Bay, which is the Rutgers legendary transfer Vince Garrett's team.
Oh, nice. So,
but
And by the way, it was Milwaukee who beat Green Bay last night, not Cleveland State. But Wright State and Cleveland State, I think, face off on Tuesday. No, Milwaukee and Cleveland State, I'm sorry.
I guess they have they had the potential to meet, because everybody kind of expected
Cleveland State to be the other team. Yeah,
yeah, and all right.
I'm just saying that there's a slight possibility of a bid thief, but again, I don't think that Green Bay will do it just because their record was really that bad. They had a close loss to Wisconsin. Now, if they beat Wisconsin, I think they could have gotten in even with the rest of their record. But the Horizon League has, you know, In KenPom rankings, like a lot of high 100s and 200s in there. And Green Bay also compounded the problem by playing three non-Division I teams.
Oof.
I didn't even know there was a Northern Michigan. St. Francis, Illinois, and Minnesota Duluth. I've heard of Duluth. They have a good hockey team, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying that there is a possibility of a bid thief there.
Yeah. So St. John's sitting on the bubble. The other big news leaked out by Adam Zagoria, Lavin negotiating an extension. What are some of your thoughts there?
I was going to say that I don't know what to say about it, but I do know what to say. I think that despite a team that sometimes feels a little less than what they should be, and an approach by Lavin that is sometimes overly reliant on teaching in places where wins are needed. And I don't know, I mean, those things aren't necessarily exclusive, but ever so often you have, you know, Kadeem and Jai moments. It's a good move because I think it helps the Red Storm go out and recruit in a way that says, you know, this coach is going to be here for a long time. The team and the school has confidence in the coach, and the coach has confidence in the school, wants to be there. I think, yeah, it's just something that as a coach you have to do, or that as a program you have to do, to make sure everything keeps rolling well. And if you didn't, you know, you really might be, you know, punting the next few years just out of spite, or hoping to wait for something that isn't necessarily going to come. And you know, to be fair, Lavin has also really elevated the program, elevated the school. St. John's has become a place where, you know, high-level players want to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that's extremely important.
Yeah, I find it funny because I really thought if he didn't get in this year, he would have come back next year, but I think he would have been on the hot seat, especially with that class he brought in. So I'm surprised, and it must be, especially for recruiting purposes, I'm surprised that he's negotiating now.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's him or if it's the school, but I do think that there's a real smart logic going on here, because you cannot have that coach going in on the hot seat when he needs to bring in probably four or five really strong impact players for the next year. You're never going to get those guys. Those guys are going to, you know, and this is probably stuff that happened to him when he was sitting out with the cancer recovery. You know, there are definitely guys who kind of fell off the map that he had recruited. I don't know how much of that was him and how much of that was other coaches saying things, you know, but, you know, Rico Gathers was supposed to come and then he didn't.
Yeah.
Derek Wood was supposed to come and then he pulled back and I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say.
Yeah. So you got to, what's the word I'm looking for? You got to kind of anticipate that he is going to have a good year next year. And I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. I lost it. Sorry.
That's all right.
Sorry, podcast listeners. I had a good thought. I swear it was in there. It just didn't want to come out of my mouth.
We sprang forward. It's hard to spring forward and keep your thoughts, you know, right at the right timing with your mouth. I understand how it works. So that's... I mean, that's a decision they're going to make, and we expect to hear an announcement at the end of the season. And hopefully, you know, those big recruiting battles will kick into high gear, and we'll actually have a summer of hard-nosed recruiting chases. You and I can talk over and over again about Isaiah Briscoe. Maybe we'll invite him on the show.
But speaking of Rutgers, you said you did watch the press conference I sent you, the Eddie Jordan kind of State of the Union.
Yeah, and he seemed proud. He seemed very engaged, and he seemed, I don't know, hopeful. What did you take from his presser?
I think I liked it. I thought it was very as honest as he could be to the press, because I was talking. I go with my father to the games, and we were talking on the way out yesterday just how much better they looked at home in the once the conference season started. And I think he was being honest that it was a major adjustment for him as well.
That's true. And by the way, people can find this on what page was it on? Was it on Rutgers?
It's Rutgers YouTube page, which I think is Our Vision 1766.
Wow, that was complex. Our Vision 1766. Good Lord. Well, just look for Rutgers YouTube page and Eddie Jordan's press conference after the Cincinnati game, and maybe follow along as we talk. But yeah, So you're saying that, yeah, it was an adjustment for him. And yes, he did say that, you know, it was an adjustment for him learning how to deal with college players, I guess, really?
Yeah, I mean, he basically said for the past 20 years, all he had to worry about was
X's and O's.
X's and O's. And now it's, you know, make sure they go to class and, you know, make sure they're engaged for practice and all that sort of thing. And I thought what was really interesting, and not too many people talked about this, but they asked him about the playing time and complaints about playing time. And he said he talked to Larry Brown, and Brown told him that at this level, every kid thinks he can play and thinks he should be getting minutes. And Jordan said, you know, every time he sat a kid, he felt bad. He said in the NBA, you know, you sit a player, they're still getting paid. But here, they're not getting paid, so they're just sitting. And he said every time he sat a player, it took him a while to kind of get over that. He said he was 11 deep. At the beginning of the season, and by the end of the year, he was playing eight players. He really cut the rotation down. We talked about Seagears sitting out second halves and people not buying in. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting where he figured out, you know, he helped heal the team from all the Mike Rice stuff. And, you know, the last month of the season, he really turned it into, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to try and play with the best players who are buying in. I think he figured that out.
I mean, that's an interesting statement, too, because, you know, thinking about what Larry Brown said, you know, the thing that you're taking away from players when you're not playing them is their ability maybe to make money in the future.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought about that a little bit with the guys that St. John's has deep on the bench. You know, there are guys, you know, Jamal Branch, who plays, Marc-Antoine Bourgault, who doesn't play, and Max Hooper, who probably isn't necessarily thinking about a future in basketball. But I think about these are guys who have good skills, and they have a varied skill set, but it doesn't necessarily, I don't know, seem to fit the team. And these are guys whose opportunities are being hurt. And you feel bad for them.
Yeah, I think what I mentioned yesterday at the game is once you have your program rolling, then the guys who aren't playing are usually your talented freshmen and sophomores who are just kind of waiting their turn. But at least with Rutgers right now, he has so many JUCOs and seniors and juniors that the kids who aren't playing at this point, he is kind of taking away. If they wanted to go on with basketball, it's hard to give them a shot because they're sitting the bench. There's not that you know, balance with all the classes. And I think that's the problem. I think, you know, you look at Cincinnati and the guys coming off the bench were Jermaine Lawrence and, you know, some freshmen, very talented freshmen and sophomores. Mm-hmm. But they're still freshmen and sophomores, mm-hmm. and you got to expect that unless they transfer, they're going to get their turn eventually.
Yeah, like Pitt, like Pitt. UNC, like all the big programs, Duke, yeah. et cetera. Yeah,
yeah. So I think that's one of the adjustments he had to make. He also said, you know, he basically said we're going to hit the ground running, and he meant recruiting, as soon as the tournament is over. And I know he had two pretty talented players in the crowd yesterday in Mustafa Diagne. Sat and watched. I know he's probably a Syracuse lean, but just getting him to come and watch the game. And then a kid, I'm not going to remember. I have to look up this kid's name, where he's out of, Trey Lowe. Who's been averaging something like, he's a 6'5 shooting guard who's been averaging like 27.
Where's he from? Game.
He's from Jersey. Hold on a second. I got to look up. Ewing. He's from Ewing, New Jersey, South Jersey.
Okay.
That's where college in New Jersey, Trenton State, is. Mm-hmm. He's a 2015 shooting guard, Trey Lowe. And then he was in the crowd to watch Isaiah Briscoe go up against Malachi Richardson last night.
Nice.
So he's out there. He's getting his face out there. They're recruiting a point guard from Point Pleasant in case somebody leaves. Matt Farrell, who Notre Dame just came in and watched. So he's trying to build the team, and he's in with some talented players. I think Jordan is doing his best to not waste time on the players he doesn't think he can get. So he's not going after some of the really top New Jersey players right now.
Yeah.
Besides Briscoe and Diagne. Mm-hmm. That may change if somebody like a Briscoe or Diagne decides they want to come here and, you know, kind of commits early and want to be the Pied Piper sort of thing. But yeah. I think he's going after players he think he can develop.
Good.
So
on the St. John's side, you know, as we all know, St. John's is looking at Isaiah Briscoe as well, and we all know what that means. he's going to go to Connecticut. No,
yeah, exactly.
No. I don't think that means that at all. Actually, I think the fact that Rutgers is in it means that maybe he does have an urge to go local, or people who are in his head who want him to go local, which, puts St. John's in a very good stead. Because what conference is Rutgers even going to be in next year, right?
The Big Ten.
Is that a conference? Do they play basketball?
They do. They're really good at basketball.
Oh, nicely done. Sheikh Diallo has been on the sidelines for at least one game, I think a couple. He's a 2015 forward, top five regarded guy out of Our Savior New American. So you can kind of imagine a slimmer, faster Chris Obekpa.
Yeah. Rutgers was kind of on him early, but I think he was one of the players. That was the name I was trying to think of, one of the players that Jordan said, all right, we have no shot.
Yeah. So that'd be a big get. I mean, that's some high cotton out there, as they say.
Yeah. I think I had a thought when you said that, and I lost it. But
you really got to write these thoughts down.
I know. I need a pen and paper here.
Well, while you do that, let me double back to Rutgers. And just a schematic question, I guess. You said that against Connecticut, there was a stretch where they were getting the exact shot they wanted. What is that exact shot that they want these days?
Like, well,
who are the guys that they're looking for, and who are the guys who are, seem to be developing into go-to guys for next year?
Kadeem Jack has definitely turned into. They made an adjustment with Jack when Wally Judge got hurt in the middle of the year and he had to sit out a game, and it forced Jack to play center instead of power forward, and he's really kind of taken to that role. He's been scoring like between 15 and 20 points every game since then, including a game where he had 31 we talked about. So they're trying to get the ball into Jack's hands open, but I think. When I was talking about that stretch, they were I'm trying to remember because I watched it a couple of days ago. They were drawing double teams. They had Jack down along the wing at one point for a jumper that he could usually make. He missed it. I think Miles Mack was on the bench at that point, and J.J. Moore might have been. So they found Craig Brown open for a couple jumpers, but he was wide open, and it's a shot he can usually make. I don't think he's often the number one option at all, but I think they worked the ball around and ran the offense where they were taking good shots and getting the shot that, it wasn't a jacked up three by Seegers or somebody triple teamed, because they've been throwing a lot of bodies at Jack. He'll get the ball underneath the basket and he would be triple teamed, and he was smart enough to pass back out. So I think the go-to guys are clearly right now Miles Mack and Kadeem Jack.
Okay.
I'm not sure Mack was in that stretch. I don't remember.
All right.
Why? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, no. It's more of a curiosity. Just seeing how the Rutgers team is developing. It's lovely. I appreciate their development.
Yeah. One of the big developments yesterday, J.J. Moore had 19 points, and he's finally been going to the hoop. Using his size and taking the baseline instead of just settling for the three-point shot with a guy in his face.
Yeah.
So that's been nice. They've been doing that. So you've seen, changes where the ball is not sticking in somebody's hand. And when it does, that's when Jordan's been using the bench. When somebody jacks a three, Moore and Seegers sat a lot this year because they were jacking those three-point shots.
Yeah.
Instead of working the ball around.
We're kind of at that settled point where both teams are about to, go into their conference tournaments and win their conference tournaments, right?
Yes, Rutgers is going to win the AAC tournament.
So the AAC final is Saturday night.
Saturday night,
same as the Big East. I see what they're doing there. I see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they want to take eyeballs away from the Big East. How jealous!
I think so. Yeah, well, we won't have to worry about that next year.
Yeah, next year it'll be like, who? The AA what?
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
That's going to be it's going to be Connecticut, Cincinnati, and the
Conference USA.
Yeah, exactly.
Poor Connecticut.
I don't feel bad for them.
But they were in the Big East.
Yeah, I don't feel bad.
Yeah, nobody feels bad for them. So both conference tournaments start on Wednesday with Rutgers playing Wednesday evening or afternoon?
At evening at 7. What time is St. John's?
St. John's is 2:30 Eastern on Thursday afternoon.
Oh, there's a bye?
Yeah, there's a bye for the top six teams.
Okay.
So DePaul has fallen to the bottom, and they'll play Georgetown, and Butler plays Seton Hall.
Ooh, Butler ran Seton Hall out of the gym last night. DePaul didn't play.
Yeah, that's true.
They just ran out of the gym themselves.
Butler's on a roll.
Yeah. All right, Norman, so what's your Big East prediction? Give me something weird or exciting that's going to happen during the Big East tournament.
I want to say Xavier's going to win.
Really?
Yes, except I can't say that because none of the teams in the middle of the Big East are good enough that make you say, or on a streak enough that make you say, hey, this team, they've got it this time, you know?
Right.
But then it's hard to predict the Big East tournament because I want to say Villanova's going to win because I don't think Jay Wright's the kind of coach who's going to lay down and say, my team needs a few extra days of rest, as some of the major conferences will. Notice how many times Duke has won the ACC tournament? Saying. or, you know, there are just various tournaments where you just see teams all of a sudden lose and you're like, you know, you guys are just looking for a break, aren't you? You know?
Right, yeah.
But I feel like Jay Wright's the kind of coach who'll want to actually win and also prove that they can take out a team like Creighton, who have slapped the crap out of Villanova by scores of 96-68 and 101-80.
They have 3 losses, and 2 of them are to Creighton.
I mean, it's amazing. I also point out that Villanova has 4 overtime wins and no overtime losses. And that's just like a little side betting tip. Ding! From me. Something to watch out for.
I think the media is going to want Creighton to make a run. You know they're going to want to play up the Doug McDermott angle.
Oh, yeah. Best player, biggest stage.
Yeah, so I'm sure he'll have a game where he goes off for, like, 52 points, and that's all they can talk about. And then the next game he'll get, you know, they'll get punched in the face by Xavier, maybe.
Maybe they've found the rhythm and they've gotten the energy. Did you see what they were doing to Providence last night?
I did.
Oh, my God, that was abuse.
And they brought McDermott back in just so he could get the 3,000. Didn't he hit, like, a bomb to get it?
I missed the 3,000 because at the half I was like, I can't watch this anymore. I feel bad for these kids.
Yeah, I think I was watching poor Friar blog. You guys were talking on Twitter. I saw last night. Felt a little bad for him.
Oh man,
he had 45 points.
Oh my god! It was funny how in that first half, Doug McDermott did those things that always remind me that, you know, no matter what you say about his foot speed or whatever, his ability to defend, this is a guy who has an NBA role and has an NBA career. Simply because there are always guys that people are like, oh, he's an NBA player because he's so athletic. That doesn't mean, I mean, that means something.
Yeah.
But you have to turn that athleticism into tangible results. Doug McDermott is all tangible results. That guy, I mean, his release is sick quick. He just knows how to space himself. And when he gets that ball, you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just insane. He's just an insane player. And I'm sure everybody wants to see him go off at the Garden.
Yeah.
Kind of like, who was it a couple years ago? Oh, McNamara.
Yeah.
Had that stretch where he went crazy.
Yeah, that would be crazy. And you know what? I would pay to see that. I think McDermott going nuts. I would buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. This is my first year not going to the first or second day of the Big East tournament in many a year.
But why would you go?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I know just you're secretly a big Creighton fan, but...
No, I have no reason to go this year.
So what are your surprises in the AAC tournament? Somebody goes to the AAC tournament?
In Memphis. Clearly, Rutgers winning would be the surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But in all honesty, I think I don't think it's going to be Louisville or Cincinnati making a deep run. I think you're going to see an SMU or a Memphis kind of surprise people. I don't think people are talking about SMU because of the turnaround, but I don't think people are talking about Memphis that much. And they're so fast and so athletic.
But they're so sloppy and they're so, I mean, oh, they're so, they just look so disorganized half the time.
Yeah, but I think they're the kind of team that could put it together for a stretch or a 3-day stretch. But, you know, they're going to face up against Rutgers in the final, and then that's when the sloppiness will come out.
This is true. They'll just start handing them the ball.
Here, just take it. You've come this far. I'm trying to think, though, what is the AAC is so top-heavy that like, and there's no real, what am I going with?
There's no real favorite, you mean?
There's no real underdog. Like, is Houston going to beat somebody? No. Probably not. You know, like,
I mean, I guess the only underdog you kind of have is Memphis, because they're the ones that have looked the weakest at times, probably have the worst losses.
But they're home.
And they're home, you know, yeah. So that's kind of like an underdog fun at home story, you know?
Yeah, so.
And honestly, looking again at their losses, I think of them as worse than they are because they've had stretches where teams have played them a little close. But it turns out that their only really bad loss is a road loss to Houston.
Yeah, and Houston's good at home.
Yeah.
So I do think, and, you know, here's what I could see happening if you're a Rutgers fan, because this is Rutgers kind of luck. That if they were to make a run and win the AAC tournament, it would be like J.J. Moore averaging like 28 points a game. And it's the sort of thing that, oh, my God, that was an amazing run, but it doesn't leave you any hope for next year because your best player on the team is gone.
Oh, but that's fine. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, with a bunch of seniors, making the NCAA tournament is a great run. Now, if it was like, the thing that's always depressing is if you're watching a team roll through the NITs and win the NIT, but then you're like, oh, but all those guys are gone. So yeah. That was the ceiling.
Right.
The NIT
right.
championship. Great. Yeah.
So, but I mean, you get to, if this team ever pulled off a miracle, it would be one of the greatest, you know, as a Rutgers fan, probably moments ever.
It would probably, as a basketball fan, one of the greatest moments ever, because it's Rutgers and everybody knows it's Rutgers.
Yeah.
And
it would,
you know,
it would actually probably upset people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. There'd be some bubble team, you know, like St. John's. I'd be like, no!
Yeah, so let's see what happens. It's going to be a fun week. Hopefully we're talking about something exciting on next Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of just other teams.
Other teams. Who's going to get the number one seed?
Blah, blah, blah. Do you have any upset picks? Blah, blah, blah.
You know, we're going to have to make that exciting next week now, if we...
No. We're gonna talk in that voice. We're going to talk that turtle in the Looney Tunes.
I was thinking NPR DJ.
Oh, yes. NPR.
So.
I don't know. Maybe we'll do a... Anyway.
All right. So this has been Not Half Bad. We have tournament week coming up, which is always exciting.
Always fun. Go out and go to your local bars, or, you know, sit in your local house and invite some friends over. Watch
your local house.
Your local house. I just thought it sounded funny. And sit with some friends and enjoy and watch with some casual fans. Enjoy a game that with featuring two teams you've never heard of.
Yeah, that should be fun. But there's just going to be a ton of basketball on. So we'll check back in next week. And I'm Dave of OnTheBanks.com. You can find me on Twitter at Dave_White.
And this is Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find The Rumble at RumbleSBN on Twitter. And you can also email us at NotHalfBadPod@gmail.com with your questions, comments, and concerns.
Yeah, send us some questions, because I think we're going to need some more stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we'll take an end-of-season mailbag.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
We'll have to promote that. But buy my books.
Yeah, buy his books. What are the books?
When one man dies, the evil that men do and witness to death. They are all crime thrillers, and they are all set in New Jersey and Rutgers and the surrounding areas.
I just love the title, Witness to Death.
Yeah, that's my agent. My agent came up with that one.
Don't say that.
Sorry.
It's all you.
All me. No one else.
Your mastermind. Thank you for listening again to Not Half Bad, and we hope to see you next week.